The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
Howdy doody once again, our dear listeners. It is your Perth Football Podcast host, Sean Fry, until someone dethrones me. Tommy Dolman's here with us as well, Mr. Football WA. Tommy, after a massive round six, I believe it is. I think we're half a dozen rounds in. How are you after a long weekend?
Yeah, flagging a little bit. Three commentaries on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend. So
you can hear it in the voice.
Definitely running out of petrol tickets, but yeah, we should be able to push through for another hour or so.
Running on fumes, just like I like to do in the car. Let it get as far to the left of that red line as you can, just for the adrenaline. Another man who is always running on fumes because he's always going at 100 miles an hour everywhere he goes. If you believe the YouTube captions, his name is Khalid Osunwaf. Khalid, how are you?
I am great, mate. It's been a while since I've been a Khalid.
Yeah, nice to dust off the old classic. And we had,
I think the reason Khalid is running on fumes is because he's not had his coffee. And that's always a nice little segue and a little plug to maybe just remind some of our listeners to sign up for the Patreon to get some great content like the full-time whistle that we put out on the weekend with me and Josh.
Yeah, what, was it a bit forced, that segue, Kalichi, or are we going to let him have that, leave it in?
I thought it was a terrific segue. I am a little bit partial to a coffee. And the good thing about being partial to a coffee is that the price of a Patreon subscription is $6. And that's exactly what it costs to make a long mac topped
long
up with
mac
almond
topped
milk.
Up with almond milk. Yeah, that's right. Not oat milk. I thought you were on oat milk for
not oat milk. I was on oat milk for a long time, but it turns out almonds are a little bit better for
not
you.
Not quite enough for an espresso martini either.
No, certainly not. No, not these days. Bloody hell, cost of living and all that. But speaking of the Patreon, our full-time whistle episode this week was our headline game. That was the top of the table clash, which we will get to a little bit later after our Macron moment of the week. Perth Football Podcast, of course, brought to you by Macron and also the good people down at, bloody hell, I didn't write this down and I'm blanking
Peak
on their name.
Peak Performance.
I got there. The Peak Performance Institute. We'll speak with Mark in between parts again. So Macron moment of the week. What was it, Kalichi?
I've got two really quick ones. The first is seeing Cam T score goals again. It's great to see him back playing football. He's had a really bad patch of luck with injuries, and seeing him score goals is great. I remember the first time we saw him in real life, it was Sorrento playing Rockingham, and we were like, mate, that guy is huge, and he can touch the ball, and he's absolutely quality, and he does everything. And we left that game going like, it's Big Cam Tease, so we call him Big Cam Tease because he is, in homage to Ben Roethlisberger there. And the other moment of the week for me was, of course, we just right now, where we went online to see, you know, get all the stats and the figures, and saw that Giles Davies played 16 minutes on the weekend, but he managed to get himself a yellow card. And Giles, I salute you for that. That is commitment to the cause.
Seamlessly rolls into my Macron moment of the week, because I was just going to say Davies playing for they who shall not be named. Scoring again, and just great to see. And as you call him, the homie Yort, running in behind him and just giving the big finger, pointing at the young kid and giving him a big hug. It looked like a team that we won't mention, but a team that are really there to play for each other. Do you got a moment of the week, Tommy?
Yeah, there was a fun moment of the week, I suppose, at my game, the Knights Kingsway game, where there was two goal line clearances from Aaron Williams and Callum O'Connell. Unfortunately, they were both in vain, though, because Christian Santich, the third time of asking, lashed home to make it 2-2. And probably just a little shout-out as well for Dinella White Eagles, top of the league after a 3-1 win in the top of the table, clash with Minocq University Melville. So that's both of those are equally my Macron moment of the week.
It was actually a cracking finish from Santich at the end of that little big game of pinball that he was playing, and really just thought, this is just getting a bit silly now. I am just going to roof it.
I also just want to do a quick throwback and say I love that we can now just think of that team as Voldemort and just be like, you know who, and don't have to reference them in anymore.
All right, stop talking about them. You're treading on thin ice. Let's dive into the action. So it is, of course, Monday evening, the 22nd of April, after round six, the opening game, which, as we mentioned, is going to be is the deep dive on the full-time whistle. That was Knights 3, Kingsway 3, De Rocca long-range opener. And then I forgot what Joe Knowles does. Kalichi, can you refresh my memory?
He scored a goal.
He scored the equaliser, and then Ryan Lowry completed the turnaround before halftime, and Kingsway were up. But then that goal that Tommy had as his Macron moment of the week, Christian Santich going ping pong, top of the net after a couple of goal line clearances, and then Goodliff again. I feel like we're saying that quite a bit. Owen Goodliff scoring. That might be a second, third week in a row or something. Tommy, you'll know.
Welcome to the good life.
Oh, very good. Kalichi.
I was just going to say, for that Goodliff goal, it shows you the tenacity that Western Knights team had, because that second half, it looked like they just decided to work. And the way that he ends up pressing and harrying, it almost looked like a lost cause. But the fact that he gets something out of it is terrific. And he's showing like other aspects of his game, right? He scores the spectacular long ranger a couple of weeks ago. He does a little fox in the box touch the other day last week against Armadale. And then this one where he just works his knackers off, gets the ball, keeps his composure and scores. I think they're getting themselves a good goal scorer there as well.
And then who doesn't love a chest and vol? Liam Boland with the equaliser 5 minutes from time. Knights still top, still undefeated. And jump on the Patreon and go and listen to the full-time whistle if you want to hear more about that game. But Knights still top by a point and undefeated. And Kingsway, I think, now undefeated in four. So two of the form teams in the competition. We'll move on to two of the what's the opposite of a form team? Out of form team, I guess. Two of the out of form teams in the competition, Balcatta 3, hoping that this will turn it around for them, and Inglewood 1. As you'd expect, in a bottom of the table clash, an absolute shambles for the opening goal. It's been credited to Harry Evans, and we don't mind that because we like Harry, friend of the pod. It was, just a long ball into the box, and goalkeeper really should have done better. It just bounced off Harry's head, I think it was. And it was not the best defending. So Balcatta would have been very unhappy early on. But before you knew it, they were up. It took them 25 minutes to turn it around. Roston Griffiths' header and what Tommy described as a stroke. Ben Hinshelwood stroked home for the 2-1. And we had seen this before. Balcatta in the lead. could they hang on this time? And the answer was against Inglewood. Yes, they can hold on to a lead. Second yellow for Elliot Ireland helped. Hit that button, Kalichi. Yes, it was our only naughty boy of the round, Elliot Ireland. And Kalichi, you said you saw the second yellow, couldn't really make heads or tails of it. One of those that maybe we didn't have a perfect angle of.
Yeah, we absolutely didn't have a perfect angle of it, especially from our vantage point with the camera that's, you know, behind the bollards down there at Balcatta. But Matthew Southern had a really good view of it, and you could see the players behind him from the Balcatta team were kind of gesturing as if he's gone in studs up. And it didn't look like a malicious or a vicious tackle, so you can only imagine that he's kind of wrecked the back of the player. And I think it's 2 weeks in a row now where it's been unnecessary red cards for Inglewood while the game was in the balance. And I think it was from a Elliot Ireland mistake earlier that led to that goal from that free kick. And he is one of those players who was brought in this year, and he had a really good night series and kind of stamped his importance in the midfield next to Matty Tuimonopoulos. So he's going to be away for the next game. I don't know if that means he's going to miss the FFA Cup game or if he misses a league game, but he's going to hope to, they're going to hope it's the FFA Cup game, because if he misses a league game, they're missing him against another, you know, bottom of the table relegation 6-pointer, so to speak.
Well, he departed, and Japanese import Shogo Osawa finished the job, made it 3-1. And Tommy, last year I kept trying to bait you into making a call on whether it was time to panic for Redacted. But is it time to panic? Surely I can get you to go a slightly earlier call on this one. Inglewood, I don't look cut out to be in this league at the moment. Panic stations?
Yeah, I think it is time to panic a little bit if you're Inglewood, because it has been a very tricky start. And we did know that there was some changes in the off-season, both on and off the pitch. So there was always going to be an element of it taking a little bit of time to gel. So you do have to sort of allow for a little bit of grace time in that sense. But unfortunately, from an Inglewood perspective, they're not scoring goals at the moment, which is one thing. And I'm not so worried about that, because you can eventually find a formula in terms of attacking. You can switch things up in certain respects, and you can maybe build on things as the season goes on and mix a few formulas together. But it's the fundamentals in terms of that defensive record, which is concerning me at the moment. And even when they do get a little bit of luck on the weekend and they do get a little bit of a leg up in terms of getting that break early in the game, just the fact of conceding sloppy goals in the manner they did would be something that would be really concerning. And we've seen it earlier in the season, the game to Perth, where they were 4-0 down after 35 minutes. The second half against Floriat, where, again, another second yellow card, saw them concede 4 goals subsequently after that and then lose the game 5-0. So it's going to have to be a matter of going back to the fundamentals now, I think, for Inglewood. Just tighten up, be really difficult to beat, lose 1-0, that's fine, or grind out a goalless draw. But it's that sort of change that I think is going to have to come now for Inglewood if they are to at least give themselves a little bit of confidence in terms of staying in games and maybe pinching something on the counter-attack. And as Kalichi said before, and you said as well, Sean, it's a couple of big weeks, a real banana skin in the cup this weekend against UWA Netherlands, and then you're against Armidale, a second bottom-of-the-table clash, in 2 weeks. And those are games that they've got to get results from, I think.
Yeah, and they... As you were saying, losing 1-0 would be one thing, but they're losing almost 3 goals a game. Their average losing margin, they've scored 2, conceded 19, goal difference of negative 17, and they go into they will go into the game against Armidale in a similar position where we said, look, it's a bottom of the table clash, but Balcata were, you know, I think they were minus 3 and Inglewood were minus 15, so it was a huge gulf in the number of goals they'd been able to score and goals they'd conceded. And for Armidale, it's the same. Their goal difference is only minus 4 at this stage. So they've actually have picked up 4 draws as well and just the 2 losses out of their 6 games. So, Armidale would go into that one heavy favourites, and you'd think another loss to Inglewood, and it would almost be time to pour one out for their relegation. They are 5 points off the automatic safety already, just 6 weeks in. So long season, but we'll see how we go. Nick Carter and Kalichi are going to do a deep dive on this game, a bit of a Coach Carter special, if you will, the Patreon out on Wednesday. Did you have anything else you wanted to say on that before we move on, Tommy?
No, I just wanted to praise Balcata, because it is obviously... two sides to every story. And for Balcata, obviously, we've spoken about them every week on the show a little bit in terms of not quite being able to get over the line. So just psychologically now, that's going to be a real boost for them going forward. And a lot of congratulations, I suppose, do go out. Obviously, it has probably taken them a little longer than they would have liked to have gotten that first win of the season, but at least they've stuck to their task. They've not got their heads down. They've continued to play the way they want to play under Glenn Grosstate. And hopefully they can use that winter to go on to bigger and better things during the season now.
And I mentioned it on the Patreon, but Royston Griffiths was just an absolute was the difference for them in this game. He played in midfield, played a deep line role, almost like Clark Kelty used to play for Perth SC, where he would just be spraying the balls around, real commanding in the middle, real presence. And the way that he was coaching some of the players and talking them through the game was terrific to see. So yeah, like Sean said, we'll do a deep dive of that and that'll be out on Wednesday.
Would you say he was the Griffrence? We might have to start that name if he carries on. Yeah, look, I think Balcata just learned the secret. Go a goal down instead of a goal up and then go from there, because the inverse wasn't working for them. Another team that can't find things to work for them right now, certainly defensively, this Young Glory side that we came into the season thinking we're going to be a little bit more organised, a little bit harder to beat, a little bit more wily. They've just conceded 4 second-half goals for the second week running. This time it was De Bayswater who hit 5. Jankulowski early own goal before Seb Despotovski and Sam Barry scored 2 in 4 minutes to put the Glory up. And it looked like, hey, things might be all right for them. Went into halftime with the lead. But as I said, second week in a row, they've conceded 4 second half goals. Lovely Cam Tease header from a long throw, the Steins penalty, and then friend of the pod, Wacko Jacko. Comes off the bench and, breaks the offside trap twice. The second, in particular, a delightful little finish, a first time lob. But yeah, just a couple of long balls over to Jacko and a couple of goals, and obviously the Glory at that point pushing for the equaliser, and then probably just heads dropped a bit on that last one. We do have, just on this game, before we get into seeing what the panel want to talk about here, a snippet from James Collins. Once again, not the James Collins. What's that all about, Kalichi?
So, yeah, James was the former strength and conditioning coach for Bayswater City, but, of course, he's moved to Scotland and he's become a strength and conditioning coach. I'm going to butcher the name here, but I think the team is called Inveruri, Inveruri Locos. They are actually in the cup final of the Aberdeenshire Cup playing Bucky Thistle. Will the real Partick Thistle stand up? So no respect for Bucky. And yeah, he obviously a big Bayswater fan and a big fan of the podcast, gave us a little bit of a snippet where me and him have a conversation. And turns out that some of the coaching staff played with a younger Daryl Nicol, and that they had stories about going on a trip to Magaluf, which we're not told. But yeah, we'll play that for you right
now. Turn your headsets up and we'll be back with the Scottish Football Podcast after this.
All right, through the medium of technology, we've got James Collins on the line. James, absolute pleasure to speak to you, mate. Hope you've been well. Just to get straight into it, how's it been since leaving Perth? You know, you can't imagine you would have thought that the club would be having a season like this, mate. How have you been?
It's been good, you know. I found myself a new football club. Yes, the weather may be a bit poor and not the best, but I'm having a good time. I'm enjoying myself and learning a lot of life lessons while I'm here.
That's bloody awesome, mate. Obviously, there is one Scotsman in this league that's played a decent level back in Scotland, and that's Gordon Smith, naturally, but we also believe you're close to where Daryl grew up, and you may or may not have heard some stories about him. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got a lot of time for both of those players. Obviously, Gogsy I've worked with a lot in my time at Bayswater, and also Daryl while I was at while we were both at Bayswater as well. But yeah, look, so the coaches that I'm currently working with, Dean Donaldson and Jamie Lennox, both played with Daryl while he was at Cove Rangers back in the 2015-2016 season. A few stories about, you know, football trips to Ibiza and Magaluf, but nothing that I really want to disclose and nothing that won't put both my coaching friends and Daryl down.
All class is always, mate. But, you know, talking about the season from a Bayswater perspective, you got to be pleased with the result over the weekend. It was a little touch and go for my heart, but do you reckon they can do it, mate? Do you reckon Basie can lift the trophy at the end of the year or make the top four?
Yeah, great result over Glory on the weekend. It's always nice, you know, to start your Saturday morning catching up with all the NPL action and watching, you know, the mighty Bayswater beat a good Glory side. And yeah, of course, I think they can do it. They've definitely got the ability to go on and win, so I think they can, and we'll see where the season takes us.
Well, I'm hoping they can too, mate. Everyone knows that I'm the biased, Basie suffering fan in the Perth Football Podcast. But moving into the other reason why you're calling for us, I'm going to butcher the name, but I think you're playing for Invaluru. Invaluru Locos, and playing against Bucky Thistle in the cup final. It'll be actually on by the time listeners listen to this, but it's the Aberdeen Cup, Aberdeen Shire Cup. You guys made it to the final, so give us a few words about the game and what to expect.
So yeah, Bucky have a good side, and I think we have a better side. So we've got Paul Coots, who's played over 100 games for Sheffield United. We've got a couple boys on loan from Cove Rangers, and Milos and Miles. So yeah, I definitely think we can get the job done against them. It'd be a tough game and a good game, but what else would you rather want than a cup final on a Tuesday night?
A cold Tuesday night in Aberdeen, I'm sure, is absolutely right up there in the list of things that football fans want. But in terms of the team, the season, the year, mate, were you expecting all of this? Like, were you expecting this amount of success, this amount of challenges that you would have seen for the club?
Yeah, look, we're always trying to be positive when you come into a season, into a new club. But, you know, I came into a side that was sat 16th in the league with 4 points after 12 games. But, you know, 22 games later, I finished season 10th with 44 points. So not a bad return from our point of view. But, yeah, look, cup final coming up against a Bucky side who have just recently won the title on goal difference. And they now give themselves a chance to go in play in the league too. So yeah, that Bucky side also played against Celtic in the Scottish Cup down at Celtic Park, which for them would be massive. And yeah, so I came into a side recently after new coaching staff also came in to the club. But look, we always try and be positive when we're going into new games. So we're hoping that we can get to do a job on Bucky this week. It'll be a good game, so we look forward to it.
Jimmy, mate, all the best to you and the team. Thank you so much for the interview, and good to know that you keep listening to us for all your WA news, and hopefully makes you feel like you're not too far away. Thank you so much, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thank you once again to James Collins for that. Thank you, Kalichi, as always. Was there anything you guys want to touch on this one before we go have a chat with Mark and then come back for part two?
Yeah, at halftime, I was absolutely furious. As the resident Bayswater City fan in this podcast, I was absolutely furious. And I was furious because it's kind of just like, I even said it in the group chat. I was like, Tommy, I think you're correct. I think the defense is what's actually going to let Bayswater City down. And again, this is on the back of them losing 3-0 the week before, 2-0 the week before that, and just going like, what is going on right now? You've taken the lead in 3 minutes. You've got drawn back into a scrap by this plucky Perth Glory side. Like, why can't we just have a nice, lovely 1-0 is plenty? And then just the attacking prowess just comes to fore. And you go look at that performance, and you've got Anasmo playing balls in to Jackson. You've got Big Cam T scoring goals as well. You've got Steins contributing. So it feels like it's just going to be that kind of season for Bayswater where it's like, all right, we're just going to concede 4, but we might score 3, we might score none, right? We might score 6, we might score none. And like, I think that might just be the way home for them, where they have games against teams who are supposed to be around them or lower in the division. But God, I'd love for like just a nice controlled 3-0 win from the Baysie boys.
Bayswater are going to do this to a lot of teams throughout the season. There's going to be rounds and games within this campaign where everything's going to click with those attacking players and teams are going to get tonked for 5 or 6. It's just going to happen because that's what the weight of talent will tell you is going to happen in certain games. However, as Kalichi says, there are going to be games where they run into a side like a Red Star that they did last weekend, and they've got to maybe try and adapt and be a little bit different. But the encouraging thing for them is that they're fourth in the league and that they put themselves into a pretty good position, and they've claimed a couple of pretty good scalps despite not necessarily hitting the heights yet. So I think you've got to be glass half full from a Bayswater perspective that they can eventually get that defensive structure right. From a Glory perspective, 14 goals in 3 games now conceded.
That's a lot.
Look, it'd be hasty for me to say that it's worrying because this is just how they play. But the trend is not your friend. I think if this continues to develop for too much longer, where 4 second-half goals happen, and yes, against Kingsway, that was mitigating circumstances with the red card. But yeah, just a little sign of maybe Glory having to maybe adapt a little bit. But the honest answer is, with regards to John Walmsley's side, is it's exactly the same as it was at the start of the season for me, boys. I still don't know what they are. I still haven't learnt enough about them yet. And they could still finish fourth. They could still finish 10th. I am none the wiser. Bloody good fun.
What I do want to say in terms of the more controlled aspect, and I think I can see where they're coming from in that regard, is if you go watch a bunch of the goals that they score this year, a lot of them are like 10 play sequences. A lot of them are like five pass sequences. And I think that's where they've added a lot more control. Whereas last year it was, we've sat back, we've counted, they've made it. And last year it was very much a basketball game, just full of transition. Whereas now you'll go watch the game that they scored this week, the game that they scored last week. They scored another goal like that against Balcata as well, where it was over 10 passes and they've just broke a team down and kept their composure and created really high value chances. So I think that's where the control comes from. But boy, I think they give a lot for just a good 1-0. Why? What's happened to the joy of a nice, boring 1-0 win? Why do we need these 5-2 games where I'm stressed out at halftime thinking, why can't Basel defend?
Well, I thought you were talking about the Glory.
In the same context for both teams, right?
Yeah, I suppose you're right for both teams. But I just wanted to shout out from a Glory perspective, Sam Barry. He is a heck of a player. I think I was talking to one of the coaching staff last season before I called the under-20s State Cup final. Was it the State Cup final or top four? It was one of those games. And one of the coaches told me that Sam Barry had 18 or 19 assists for the season. So I was pretty confident coming into this campaign that he was a guy who was capable of stepping up to NPL first team level. And we've seen that he's adding goals to his game as well. He's got a couple in back-to-back weeks, different types of goals as well, a composed finish in the box, but also that fantastic free kick against Kingsway last week. So props to Sam Barry, who's putting together a very nice season.
All right, so Bayswater, goal difference in the top four on goal difference from Fremantle City after that. No goals from Gordon Smith this week, which is great news, and they are 2 points clear of Perth Red Star. We'll see how his arch rival Scotsman got on at Red Star Fremantle City after the break and after we have a quick chat with Mark from Peak Performance. Back with more shortly. And as promised, we are joined once again by Mark Madison from Peak Performance Institute for our segue chat about all things football, training, and getting yourself into peak condition. And today we're going to be talking, Mark, first of all, Mark, how are you? How's the week been?
I'm good. We've had a pretty hectic week. We did a bit of support stuff for an event on the weekend. So not a real weekend for me, but it was always a bit of fun and getting out in the sun and not too bad working by the beach. So
okay, I cannot complain.
I can't complain really.
Yeah, some pretty decent beach and weather we have in this city. It was a bit cooler today, which was quite a nice change. So today, Mark, what we're going to be talking about is recovery and training in between games. So in-season recovery between one game and the next. We'll talk about the differing gaps between games and how that would affect your sort of personalized training and recovery routines. But let's just start with a, 20-game season, Saturday games, a week in between each game. What do you suggest?
Yeah, a couple training sessions in between as well. So you've obviously got to do your training with your team as well.
So say for example, if you're training Tuesday, Thursday nights, I think a lot of sporting clubs, amateur, semi-pro tend to do that. Is that be right, guys?
It's been a while since I've been in one of these teams. Kalichi, you'd know better than me. And yeah, he always used to turn up to all the trainings as well, which I didn't always do. So, but yeah, I believe that's it. I know that the training will differ from team to team, and I'm sure you would take that all into account when you're prescribing someone a recovery routine, exactly how much work they're doing at training as well. But yeah, just assuming a couple of standard trainings on the Tuesday and Thursday, and again, depends how many minutes you're playing in these games, but assuming a player, a first teamer that's playing somewhere between 70 and 90 minutes, what would you do in between those days that you're not training?
Yeah, so if you say you start your game or start the week off from after that game on the Saturday afternoon, obviously you push pretty hard, played your 90 minutes, let's say, and then Sunday's needs to be a recovery day. If you have not got the opportunity to ice bath or do something cold on the Saturday night, you want to get out there and do some water recovery, or even a little bit of ice bathing can still sometimes help. So that's going to reduce the inflammation, but it does reduce the adaptation that happens from stimulus. So I'm going to talk about a bit more about that later on in the program. So we get the recovery in, you're going to feel a bit better. If you do a proper recovery session, you should feel good to get back to training earlier in the week and therefore be able to taper off towards the end of the week. So your Friday, you're not going to go heavy leg day on Friday before the game. So definitely not a good idea. I've heard some people try to go heavy and think it's going to help them. No, definitely not. Definitely not. So how would I work out? I would suggest someone probably wants to go out maybe Monday, go Monday, Tuesday needs to be your heavier days. But if you are training, I personally like to go heavy in the gym on a Monday, and training sucks a bit on Tuesday night. Let's face it. You're going to feel heavy. You're going to feel lethargic. You're going to feel like you're a yard slower than everyone else. But when it's your teammates, as long as you're not doing anything stupid, going in for sliding tackles, trying to break legs, then that's okay.
Why were you looking at Kalichi when you said that? Sorry, carry
on. I'll have you know that I spent a lot of Tuesday.
Yeah, I think he was the one running away from everyone rather than the one trying to do the tackling. I'm sure of it.
Just for the record, in the last few seasons on the Tuesday, I spent a lot of the time on the physio table. So just want to make sure that's cleared up. That Tuesday session I spent on the physio table.
So getting back this is
a perfect opportunity to make some sort of pun about how Kalichi saves all his horrendous tackles for Friday. But we'll thank you very much. carrying on, Mark.
Not a problem. So then Tuesday night would be standard training at the club, pretty much your conditioning session. Then Wednesday, you want to do your next training session. Now, in season, I'd probably be looking at doing more whole body stuff. So your bit of body, bit of upper body, bit of lower body on each of your training sessions. I wouldn't go into full sort of like splits where maybe out of season you would do legs. Then on one day you might do chest and shoulders, and then the other one might do arms and back. Say that's a normal 3-day split. I would probably go 2 whole body workouts, a little bit of upper body, bit of lower body on the Monday and Wednesdays. Then if you have your club training Tuesdays, Thursdays, that would be great. And then you could go into a little bit of extra running stuff. Maybe on a day where you have your training session. So on one of those Tuesdays or Thursdays, you could do some interval work. So there's a program I know that used to be used by the English Premier League. They may have outgrown that now, but I know it was knowledge when I was doing sports science, and that they would take a 16-minute session, split it up into 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. So you're doing 16 sprints. Now, those sprints are gauged at 20% above your threshold. So let's use a treadmill as an example, because most of the people here are soccer players, so they're doing running for their conditioning. So if I get on a treadmill, gradually increase it to a point where I've got it on maybe a 3% incline or a 3% gradient, they call that. And then when I get to 10 Ks an hour, I can still run, but if I try to get at 10.5 or 10.3 after a couple of minutes, I can't keep that going anymore. So 10 kilometers an hour is my threshold. Then I add 20% above that. So now it's 12 kilometers an hour, still at that same gradient of 3 degrees or 3%. And then you want to do 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, 30 seconds on, and your off is stopped. It's not walking. then you don't have enough time to recover. You'll have this accumulated threshold where you, the last couple of bouts are murder. They're tough. That's why you don't want to be going too fast on a treadmill. You don't want to be trying to do it at 20 Ks an hour. You'll get spat out the back. So keep it at a safer pace and use some incline. And that way you'll get a 16-minute session. That's all you have to do with a warm-up and, you know, bit of recovery, bit of walk afterwards. And it helps to sharpen that edge with your fitness. It's something I've used over years, and it helps to gradually get you fitter without taking too much toll on your body during in-season programs.
Jeez, that sounds like a horrible, horrible 16-minute. Well, certainly the final 2 minutes sounds horrible.
The final two are bad, but I tell you now, after about 3 weeks or four sessions of that, three or four sessions, you will find those last couple of bouts aren't as bad as they used to be, and that's a good sign. That's a sign you're getting fitter. Yeah.
So that used to be.
Did you have a question, Kel?
Yeah, I used to see that. Like, I became aware of that when it was a John Terry workout that he would do towards the latter end of his career, but he was doing it at like 17 on the treadmill and would be doing it like 40 seconds on, 20 seconds off. Mm. And he would say, okay, cool, this week we're doing 10 sets. Then it'd be like, all right, we're doing now 15. And he got to a point where he could do 20 of them, and it was incredible. But I was going to ask you, the day before a game, because I was a crazy person and really fit at one stage, I would just decide to go and run for 90 minutes and it'd be like just nothing too crazy, but just a 90 minute run to say, look, you've got 90 minutes in your legs. You'll be absolutely fine for the next day. As I got older, I couldn't do that 90 minute run the day before a game, no matter what I want to tell myself mentally. So what would be an advisable thing that you could do as a footballer the day before a game, whether it's to keep the legs running, whether it's just do some more recovery, whether it's to do some more stretching, what would you kind of advise that our peak performers do?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as you suggested, you know, the mature athletes, you're not going to be wanting to run as far. It might be simply a 20-minute run and then a bit of rolling, releasing after that. But for younger athletes, sure, you can go out for a run. You can, but make sure you get that roll, release, self-massage, whether using trigger point ball or a foam roller, I don't mind. And sprinkle some of that in and amongst the rest of your week. You should be doing a little bit of release work most days, especially at the end of your training session where your muscles are warm. And, you know, as I think I mentioned last week, that tomato sauce bottle ain't so sticky and everything's a bit shaken up. Did you get a poll on that last week, Cal?
Mate, we actually forgot. I tell you what, we'll do a poll right after this. Sean, is it inside the fridge or outside the fridge? That's the poll question, right?
Yeah. To be honest with you, I think this is, I mean, you've said, Kalichi, you've spoken to the scientists. You've got the science down. It's safe to be out of the fridge. I think it just comes down to taste, whether you like that. I like the contrast of the cold sauce on the hot pie, that kind of mix, the mixture, the little juxtapositioning there, but some people don't. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy for other people to weigh in, but it's kind of like the pineapple on pizza thing. If you bake that into your personality and you're really passionate one way or the other, I think you need to go and get a new passion. But anyway, before we let you go, Mark, just quickly, if you could touch on those days. I know some of the NPL players will have them, and I know even the, you know, teams that do quite well in these cup competitions, from lower down, like your Australia Cups and the other local cups, will often have games in the midweek. So when you have those Wednesday games, I'm sure the training that they're doing is a lot lighter, but would you change anything around those gym days or that recovery when you've got two games in a week?
Yeah, so they call it periodization if you come from a sports science background, and it's where you sort of do less in the gym because you're doing more on the field and the track. You definitely don't want to be going heavy on those times. And if you speak to a really good trainer or a coach or someone with some sports science knowledge, they'll almost plan the full workout routine around the whole season. So while you're having those double games, those double weeks, your training would be less. I mean, let's face it, I'm sure that would happen at a club level. The coaches wouldn't have you doing as many sprints, as many much running. It's more about maintaining the body, what you have, making sure if there's any niggles in that, you're bouncing back for that. So same goes with your personal training load. I'd probably back off. I'd back off by 20 or 30% at least. So it's more about maintaining, work through the range. Sometimes you can take off literally the weight. So let's say you back off your bench press from doing that 100 kilos like Kelwood, you know, down to that 70 or 80 kilos, which was probably more my form and range these days. But backing that right off by 20%, but still doing the same amount of reps and sets, it would be okay, but you just, as long as you're going to be sore afterwards. And you can then focus on range of motion, making sure you got your flexibility there. So with your bench press, make sure you're going down all the way. You're opening that chest out, you're getting that stretch through the chest, and you won't be sore. So, yeah, maintenance, that's the key on those big weights. Maintain what you got, get the recovery sessions in, and definitely if you've got those two games in a week, get in some ice bathing or something like that post-game.
All right. Well, thank you again for another little glimpse into the professional conditioning life that you you live and impart on others. And if you want to get a more personalized training routine, then get down to Peak Performance Institute. Speak to Mark. Speak to the Mark that knows the way to make the best coffees, and also Mark Madison. And yeah, thank you once again for jumping on and imparting your wisdom with us.
No, not a problem, guys. Thanks a lot for having me, and thanks a lot to the whole Perth Football Podcast team and the people listening out there. Hopefully we see you down for a bit of info, maybe an ice bath, maybe a quick dip, and probably a coffee too. How's that sound?
Oh, it sounds fantastic, mate. Thank you once again. We'll speak to you again soon.
No worries, guys. Thanks again.
Cheers, Mark.
And we'll be back with part two after this. And welcome back. Thanks once again to Mark. Let's dive into the final three games this round. The one I mentioned just before the break, Perth Red Star 2, Fremantle City 3. A massive result for Fremantle City, bringing them up to just a goal difference outside the top four. It was a Legalia goalia once again. It was from the penalty spot, and then Darryl Nicholl scoring the only way he can these days from the penalty spot. But wait. You can't keep a good man down for that long. He did get his first open play goal just 7 minutes into the second half. They went in at 1-1 after a Stevens blunder at the back, and it was just that classic opportunistic Darryl Nicholl we've grown to know and love. And then another goalia from Legalia, this time a header, and then I've been practicing my pronunciation on this one, but I believe it's a Charlie Hekwach winner via a deflection. Yeah, huge result, isn't it, Tommy, for Fremantle?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a bit of a statement performance from them. We'd seen them pick up their first two wins at home, and we've spoken a little bit about that little fortress they're building down at Hilton Park. Ironic how the two promoted teams have the fortresses, isn't it? It's normally the big guns who have been in the league a long time and top of the table who have fortresses, but it's a nice little wrinkle, I suppose, on the season so far. But Fremantle have been able to take it on the road as well, so you've got to give Matty Sparrow props for a good coaching performance, obviously, to go to the home of the champions and get a result. Charlie Chechlaz, myself and Josh spoke about it briefly a little bit. He's a fantastic ball-playing midfielder. Looked the goods last season at Guelup, and you can see why Matty Sparrow wanted to bring him up into NPL level with this Guelup team. He just knows how to ping balls around. His weight of passing is really good as well in terms of dictating the play, and he was arguably man of the match, as well as Oli Legalia, who's, like many of these Fremantle players, showing that they're definitely up to the level. So very impressed with Fremantle. I was very high on them at the beginning of the season. It was just really a matter of whether, I think my prediction was whether Robert Petkov was going to be the one to score the goals for them. But OMG, it's OLG who's doing the job at the moment. Oh,
very, very good. Good use of the TLAs, Tommy. That's three-letter acronyms for those that don't work in the mining industry. Speaking of fortresses that we, again, mentioned last week, what we kept mentioning last season, or Josh and I anyway, because we're nerds for this sort of thing, the fortresses or the home ground advantage that was the inverse last year. We do have a lot of teams with very good home records to start the season anyway. Most of them are just a couple of games, but Kingsway are 2-2, Redacted 2-2, Fremantle City 2-2, Perth Soccer Club 2-3, and then Western Knights are undefeated in 5 with 2 draws and 3 wins. So Yeah, well, actually, Gloria undefeated at home as well with a win and a draw. Balcatta undefeated at home with a win and two draws. So, yeah, it's good to be playing at home this season by the looks of things. Armidale.
That's why we're doing the podcast from home this season.
Oh, Tommy, you are on fire.
Before we get into Armidale, I just wanted to talk a little bit about that game. I'm really impressed with just the flexibility that we've seen from Fremantle. They didn't have Petkov in this game, and at the start of the season, it looked like they were kind of wedded to this 3-5-2 formation where it was just get up the field and try to catch teams on transition. But they're growing into this game, and like when you've got Alex Siller on the bench, Dylan White on the bench, like Santa Lucia on the bench, and also Petkov not there, it kind of shows that they do have a little bit more depth in their squad, but more impressed with just how flexible that they are. And when you have a team that's actually flexible, that really comes down to coaching. So it's not just wedded to one simple tactic. You've got different style of plays, different ways of winning games. And I think they're going to cause a lot of teams a lot of trouble doing that. And just really quickly from that Red Star perspective as well, it kind of feels like they're just not the same kind of, they're not ticking in that same way. Tommy and Josh talk about it a little bit more in the Patreon, but we looked at them and said that they were playing a very narrow style of football, and I think it might have played into Fremantle's hands on the weekend as well.
I wasn't actually going to jump onto Armidale. I was just going to say they are, funnily enough, also, I was looking down the list, they are also undefeated at home. I think it's three matches played, three draws, and so winless at home, but also undefeated at home. So really a tester of whether you're a glass half full or a glass half empty sort of person. But then I do see Armidale are the next in our run sheet. So Tommy, anything more from you on Red Star Fremantle before we move on to that?
No, nothing further. I think it's a little too early to be concerned for Red Star, even if they haven't quite hit their straps yet. There's still a few pieces in that midfield who I think they're working on a little bit. And obviously, Chokdao's a massive absence as well. He was such a weapon for them on the counter-attack last season and such a good outball for them as well. And sometimes having those outballs is a really good thing, and they utilised it so well last season. But maybe they don't quite have that same, I suppose, fluidity in terms of those counter-attacks this season. So that's something that they'll develop and build throughout the season, and I'm very confident that they've got the cattle to get it right.
Yeah, too early to panic. I was just going to say that you know, that they do have the perfect record if Richie Beno was a football commentator of 2-2-2. So yeah, there's not panic stations for them, definitely, certainly from where I'm sitting. But yeah, they'll have to start hitting their straps soon, I think, Kalichi.
Their next game is against Stirling Macedonia at Massey Park as well, and that's a game that's always been a classic. So playing them, 1 point separating the two of them. If Stirling win, it becomes a 4-point gap between them and sixth place potentially. So, oh mate, it's spicy. It's spicy time of the year already, Tommy.
Armidale 1, Perth 1. Nothing happened for the first 85 minutes of this one, Tommy. And then, well, I don't know that. Obviously not nothing happened, but certainly not on the to trouble the scorers before David Ninkovic smashed one in from 30 yards in 85 minutes to go 1-0 up. Job done. Only it wasn't job done because a late stoppage time penalty for Armidale, and I think the first time in your match reports that you haven't referred to Riley Wishart-Steven as the Canadian, but he stepped up and scored that penalty in stoppage time to level it up. Your thoughts on this one, Mr. Dolman?
Yeah, I rinsed that description for as long as I possibly could. Yeah, I suppose Armidale are going to look at it as another frustrating day, and probably Perth too, actually. It felt like, having watched a bit of the game on times two, obviously it was a pretty late night on Saturday night for me, but I watched a bit of it on times two, and it seemed like both teams had chances to win the game. And it's probably one of those frustrating ones where they would have each felt like they had enough to get 3 points, which would have been very valuable in terms of lifting one another up the table. But unfortunately, they weren't quite able to get the job done. And it's probably the same story for both teams, really. It's that cutting edge in the final third, which is lacking at the moment. And as you said before, all the drum was at the end. So look, a point, I suppose, is better than nothing, particularly with, obviously, Inglewood obviously not faring too well at the moment. But what you don't want to do is leave yourself with too big a gap to those teams in the middle portion of the table. So a win is very important soon. But look, they were both relatively close at the weekend, I say. So is it glass half full or glass half empty on both of them? I'm not sure. What do you reckon, Sean and Kalichi?
I actually spoke to one of the coaching staff at Armadale and spoke to a referee who was the AR1 for the game. And he said that, like, in a weird way, Armadale would have felt a little bit more aggrieved about it. He said that they came out and they were just tactically perfect, and said that Perth was starting to get a really good sense of what Kenny Lowe wanted them to do on the ball, but it was just a lot of possession, but it was possession exactly where Armadale wanted them to be, and that they had a couple chances on the break. But at the same time, when I spoke to the Armadale official, they said, listen, we got really lucky there, because there was about three or four times where crosses came into the box and they just mistimed their header. They won four headers in a row, but they mistimed it, hit their shoulder, hit it straight at the goalkeeper, and it's like they could have been 1-0 up there. And then they felt that the penalty that they received at the end was pretty soft. So they said, look, at the end of the day, the penalty we thought was soft, not one that should have been given, but they felt that there was one that should have been given earlier that wasn't given. And it was one of those, I'll just make it up to you and give this one, so that now we can both say you've had a penalty, you deserve the penalty, you had one at the end of the day. So yeah, they both kind of had different perspectives on the game. But interesting to see that the referee was like, nah, Perth will feel a little bit lucky that they went off with the draw. And that he mentioned that Sam Cook was getting absolutely berated by King Kenny because he just wanted to be on the attack and on the last defender's shoulder. And he wasn't doing his defensive responsibility tracking back on the six. So
Cookie.
Hopefully he's not getting berated next week.
He's getting too big for his boots already. It's just the match-winning performance last week. But it is first points dropped for Kenny at Perth, but still undefeated, a win and a draw now. And by the sounds of it, you said the referees managed it well enough that Perth aren't going to be doing a Nottingham Forest-style Twitter post saying that the referee was a Bayswater fan or something. And, we have
don't want to see Everton go down.
What a joke of a club they are. But this is the Perth Football Podcast, so we won't rattle on about those numpties for too long. Almost said speaking of numpties, but I won't go that far. We'll move on to the team that doesn't want us to talk about them anymore. For those that missed last week, Redacted, as I've been calling them all throughout the podcast, is, of course, the high-flying Florida Athena. We won't talk about them too much, although we've been talking about them and they've been winning. They are 1 point off top, so if I was them, I'd be all for us to carry on. But took a while for the opener, 68 minutes. The opener came from Davies again, his third in 2 weeks. The youngster is first three MPL goals, I believe, from an Ambrosio cross. And then the cherry on the icing on the cake was that Kai All Murray free kick in stoppage time. Not quite Trent Alexander-Arnold, Kai, but not too far off. It was a peach. It was a peach, Kalichi.
Yeah, it was an absolute, like, it was some textbook stuff, man. The way he hit it, the way he lined it up, the technique looked awesome. All of it looked like he's just been working on this week after week after week. And I don't think he'd hit a free kick better than that for the rest of the season. And if he does, he's doing something absolutely special. It was an absolute peach of a goal. I was a little bit surprised by this result. I didn't think that it would be like a 2-0 result. You know that these are the types of games that they kind of grind out. Stirling Macedonia have been famous for doing this as well. But at the same time, so is Floriad, right? Like this feels like one of those games where they've kept it tight, they've got a goal, and then Dean Evans does something magical. You know what I mean? Like this is what it kind of felt like when you go back and you look at this result. I think it's now going to be a bit of a crunch time for them because they don't have the biggest squad. But then you can look at the fact that Chris Delarcus came off the bench. Zico didn't come off the bench. Guy Davies came off the bench. So they did sub off Noah Shabaki early, and I think he may have an injury. Hopefully it's not too serious. But I don't doubt them at all because they could have the likes of Ambrosio, who's had a pretty quiet season so far in terms of the score sheet compared to what he was doing in the night series. He could absolutely pop up. I feel like I'm talking too much about the team that we said we wouldn't talk about, so I'll leave it to Tommy now.
Well, let's go on Sterling. What does this mean for Sterling, Tommy?
I still think it's very much hold your stocks on Sterling because they have shown in games this season that they are capable of being the same old Sterling that we're used to seeing. We've also seen a little bit of chaos Sterling with that comeback at Perth, but we've also seen some games like the one at the weekend where it didn't really click into gear for them. So I still think we're not quite the wiser as to where we're going to find Sterling. I think we know that they're going to be in the mix for the top four, so I certainly don't think it's any time to be throwing anything in the bin just yet with regards to them, but that they've not quite hit the straps we've seen them in previous seasons. But look, in terms of Florio, I think they're arguably the story of the season so far. I think so many of us, and I think people in general, I mean, it wasn't just us on the podcast, but just in general, speaking to people in the preseason at games, they were a little bit unsure as to the direction as to where it's going to go. And for me, the person who deserves the most credit out of all of this is Vas Vujicic, the coach at Florida Athena. We know that he's won leagues before. He's taken Florida to the national stage of the Australian Cup. He's won a State Cup as well last season. Let's not forget, only recently. So this is a very good coach. But having changed a lot of the old guard and freshened things up with some new signings, I think you've got to give him an absolute load of credit as to how he's been able to integrate some of these younger, fresher faces. And what he has got is he's got a load of guys in the squad who have got a bit of a point to prove. You've got your guys like your Cherno Bar, Kyle Murray as well, Sean McManus back to his best after a year or so where he's had a couple of injuries. He looks like his counter-attacking best that we saw a couple of years ago.
So great to see him back fit and firing, isn't it?
Yeah, and Noah Shimaki, Kalichi, you hinted him before. Hopefully that injury is not too serious, but he's really relished that responsibility of leading the line up there on his own. And now you look at the bench as well, Guy Davies, Krista Delarcus, Filippo Joffre, Ethan Mom. These are all young guys as well who have been probably in the 18s and the 20s over the past few seasons at Athena, but haven't really seen first-team football because of the experienced guys such as your Dennis Gallons, your Phil Arnolds, and so on and so forth who have been predominantly playing in that team. So for Vas Vujicic to keep those young guys hungry and to have them ready to make that step up into the first team, for me, deserves a lot of praise. So I just wanted to give some props to Vas because I think he's done a remarkable job so far. And let's see what they can do this week in the Cup. It's a top-of-the-table clash for them against the Knights.
And just going off of that as well, a huge credit to the rear guard and the old boys in that team, your Seldarises, your boys, Ben Steele all of a sudden now as well, Ambrosio and McManus. When you have that transition, like anything can happen, right? But they've kept it so positive. They've kept the team together. They've really gone and built a really good culture around it. And like you mentioned in your moment of the week, Sean, look at the celebrations that's happening in that squad when they score goals. Like they feel like a team who is all together. And I think we, the Perth Football Podcast, deserve some credit for them as well. I think we've given an absolute target to go for. I think they've gone in there and gone, nobody believes in us, and these four idiots don't believe in us, so let's shove it in these four idiots' faces, and I still keep getting tagged in all of it. So yeah, hopefully those boys send some love our way because I think we deserve some credit for getting them to play this well as well.
Yeah, we absolutely deserve all the love and credit in the world, I think, Kalichi. With all that being said, guys, it is time to wrap things up and move on to final thoughts. Before we do, celebration or Bozzy watch first. Tommy, any Bozzy sightings? What's going on there?
No, I wasn't at Sterling at the weekend, so I don't know. And I'll keep my eyes peeled in future weeks.
Wasn't on the team sheet?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll move on from Bozzy Watch to Celebration Watch. Any good celebrations that caught your eye this week, Tommy? I obviously had mine. It's already been mentioned a couple of times, but the Davies celebration and the team's getting around him. And you mentioned, you know, Vas has always had a bit of a reputation for being a good man manager and getting the boys around each other. So that was really, really lovely moment to see. So that was my celebration of the week. What have you got, Tommy?
I don't know. It was kind of one of those weeks where
there weren't many great ones.
There wasn't too many controversial ones. I think it was a lot of teams sort of getting around each other. Obviously, Guy Davies got a little shirty, as you said, in the lead up to that, running towards the corner or the side of the pitch where everyone grouped together. But Owen Goodliff as well, when he scored the goal to make it 3-2, he ran over to the Knights dugout. And I suppose that's another example of the togetherness of teams. And it's not surprising, I suppose, you've seen teams celebrating like that and they're the top two in the league. Maybe that's just a generalisation or a cliche, but hey, there's got to be something in it.
Oh, I do have to give a shout out to Antony for Manchester United when they won their penalty shootout after sacrificing a 3-goal lead to Coventry City, and he ran away cupping his ears to the Coventry players. Full of class, that guy. Kelechi, did you have one?
I'm going to wrap this in the final thoughts as well. So my celebration, as I go in and find this picture, my celebration goes to Jason Meraki.
Ooh.
And I'm going to read it out really quickly. And it's congratulations to Balcata Etna for recognizing that women's football is a valuable product that people should be paying to watch at the top level in WA. If you want to support women's football in WA, pay the entry fee and be part of the growth of the game. The game does not grow without money. Hats off to our friends at Etna. That is absolutely quality from Jason Meraki. And I'll use this to go into my little tangent about economics and football. For us, we're very lucky that we do get to have media passes, so we don't have to pay for the 300 games we end up going to attend. But I know that all of us, when we get to these clubs, understand that this isn't just run on thoughts and well wishes. It's run on action and money, and we try to put our money behind the bar or into the club.
When you bring me down, Kelechi, we put plenty over the bar. So
we put as much as we can. And I just want to say that as you are watching this women's game, it is something that is growing, and you have to think of this from a long-term perspective of what incentives do we want to give to these women to play football. We talk about how often the best players aren't in WA and they're all over East, and what can we do to keep them in WA is we can give them salaries. We can pay for them. We can give them incentives to play football in WA. We can give them incentives to pick football over netball, over hockey, or over any other sport. And this happens when you're giving them incentives and paying them to play football. People pay to watch Division 2 football, and I'll tell you right now, as much as I love going to watch Division 2 football, it is not as good as the NPL women's football. People go and play and watch half the teams in State League Div 1, and I'll tell you right now, I would rather go watch the women's game where I was at this week, which was Subiaco versus Fremantle City. The quality that was on show there was much better than half the stuff in the State League. So if you want to live
honestly,
in the world...
If you were just going down to football matches for the quality, we wouldn't go to any football in Perth.
We wouldn't
if you
go
wanted
to any
top level football, would you? Because
you
it's,
wouldn't
it's
go to
nowhere
the
near the Premier
sake.
League or the top league. Well, that's what I said. Yeah, any football at all in Perth. I'm absolutely with you there. Up on your soapbox, Kelechi. We'll be careful as we climb down. But yeah, and we better wrap things up because you've got to go and record a podcast on the women's NPL. That's the end of our podcast for the men's NPL. Any final thoughts from you, Mr. Football?
Australia Cup this weekend. So we have a break off the NPL now, and we've got some tasty ties. Some of them have been played on Thursday, by the way, on Anzac Day. So just a shout out to a few of the interesting ties. Bayswater City, Kingsley Westside, Perth playing Coburn. We spoke Western Knights Floriat before. Inglewood United, UWA Netherlands, a little bit of a banana skin that one, potentially for Inglewood on Saturday. Stirling Macedonia versus Forestfield. We've also got Perth Red Star versus Baldivis. And then probably the pick of the ties for me, Dinella White Eagles versus Olympic Kingsway, two teams doing well in their respective divisions. So that'll be a fun one. And I wonder as well whether we'll have a member of the podcast potentially playing in the Amateur Cup on Sunday, because Josh Chites Maccabi are playing at home to Sorrento on Sunday at 3 p.m. So that'll be fantastic if Josh can get on the pitch for that one. So who knows, we might get a little bit of reaction from him on the weekend after those games for next week's pod.
Well, he's not here with us tonight because it is Passover, so happy Passover to you, Mr. Chiat. I don't know if that's the correct way to say it, but I hope you're having a good one. And, that's all from me. Any more from you, Kelechi? You're typing away there.
I was just going to say be careful and be kind.
Oh, that's the one. All right, we love you all, and it ain't no lie, Kelechi. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
you can chuck that on the scrap heap at the end.